Nightline with Sarah McDonald on ABC Radio.
Well, a new literary thriller out for this year is already being called the literary thriller of 2017. It's called Storm and Grace. It's a beautifully written book that is a thriller. It's a love story in many ways and starts out as a fairy tale. It's very romantic, but it dives very, very deep. And it dives deep into the world of free diving. Joining us now on Nightlife is author Catherine Hayman. Welcome to the show and congratulations on Storm and Grace.
Thank you so much.
Now, where did the idea for this book come from?
Well, you know, that question normally is so hard to answer. Books arrive mysteriously. We're never quite sure, are we, when they arrived, when we can't trace it to the exact moment, although we create stories to pretend that they did arrive
at
a particular moment.
Writer, that's, yeah.
You know, and gradually the story starts to feel true. But in this case, I can trace the moment, so it's really strange for me. I was actually in the middle of another book, and I'd been following some, you know, court cases a little bit obsessively about men who had killed their partners or ex-partners, and it was sort of haunting me. It was that moment. It was 2013. There was a lot in the news about that, and I'd taken up scuba diving, and at the end of November the 28th, 2013, to be precise, I had my first ever panic attack after a scuba dive. And when I came home, I started to look at the news to see what was happening about some of these court cases. But instead, what I saw on the front page of the news was the story of a free diver who had died in international competition that day. And that kind of conflation of being beneath the water that day, having had a panic attack, thinking about men and women in this particular way, they all came together in that moment and my imagination just went ping. I became almost immediately obsessed with freediving as an idea, as a concept, as a sport. I dreamed about it. For the next 2 weeks, I was actually in the middle of another book, so I had no intention of writing a book. I was just...
So you had to put that book aside and...
I did, and it's to my publisher's credit that
They went with you.
They went with me. They didn't bat any eyelids.
Yeah. But that's... A lot of writers say that. Something comes to them and they have to write it. There's just no way out of it. This has to come out.
Absolutely. I haven't been so obsessed by something for a very long time, many, many, many years.
It was like a chorus of something telling you to write it.
Well, that is how it felt, actually. As I said, I was dreaming about this world of being beneath the sea. My partner would come home and I'd be sort of standing in the kitchen weeping and he'd say, "Have you been watching those videos again?" And I'd go, "Yes, I'm sorry." And those videos were videos of people coming up from a dive and blacking out. It was like this. It sounds ghoulish, but I was also watching videos of people just descending. So free diving is the act of taking one breath and descending to depths, you know, to as tall beneath the sea as a large skyscraper
without any scuba gear,
no scuba
nothing.
Gear, one breath.
Okay.
Some of the best in the world can hold their breath for 8 or 9 minutes, and you know have gone up to depths of almost 200 meters.
And what drew you to free diving? So you were doing scuba diving, and then you heard about people doing it without the tanks and the breath, or
I had never heard of it before. I saw this news story of this particular
person.
Diver,
mm-hmm.
And you know, Sarah, I think what it was that got me, hooked in so strongly at that moment, was that this particular diver, what happened, I watched the video, and I'm a water person anyway, I'm a bit obsessed by water, but this was just, oh, I can't look away. So he dived down and there was footage under the water, and since then I've met the person who was filming him. He dived down to do the deep dive, the competition dive, and then he clearly, his instinct said to him, oh, something's not right. He turned around and started to come up. And then you can almost see his mind working. No, I've got to do it. He turns around and goes back down. And then when he came out of the dive, of course, he'd gone too long and his body couldn't cope and he died.
It's such a dangerous, mad thing to do. I mean, I've got to say to you, I'm not sure I get it. I mean, I love the water, but I'm happy on the surface of the water. I find going deep very dangerous. I think about sharks. I think about blacking out. And that's what happens. People black out and they can die and the like. But you actually started doing free diving while you were setting out to write Storm and Grace.
Well, I started to learn.
Right.
Partly because...
Because of the book or
because of the book.
You like danger.
Well, it was... Well, I mean, part of it is danger. Of course, freedivers, every freediver I've spoken to says to me, no, it's nowhere near as dangerous as downhill skiing. It's you know, and I kind of go, well, actually, you know, quite a lot of people do die. And they go, well, yes, but in certain circumstances. I think a couple of things about it really I found incredibly compelling. One is this idea that you have to listen to your own instinct. That is your guide. And to me, that seemed like the most extraordinary metaphor. It seemed to chime with so much about what I think about the world, about what I think about men and women, what I think about love, life. We have to listen to our own instinct. And sometimes that means overriding what we think of as our rationality. So getting,
and we're not very good at listening to our instincts, are we? And the busier and crazier and weirder our lives, the harder we get at that.
Absolutely.
And there's a purity in freediving between people and the ocean and their instincts. It's just them.
Yep.
And that internal
yep.
message. But then isn't there an instinct to breathe and underwater sometimes? That they don't they have something like that?
Absolutely. And when you learn to freedive, and that's one of the things that is problematic, I guess, that it, you know, in terms yeah. of metaphor.
Yeah, a bit.
Well, okay, there's a few things that go on. I have to say, I'm speaking here like I am completely an expert freediver. Right. I'm really not.
No,
I've done a
you're
bit.
You're a writer. We'll get on to the writing.
I spend yep. as much time in the water as I can, blah, blah, blah. But what you actually learn is that when you start to gag, that is your reflex to breathe. And when you're learning, you will learn, like my instructor would say to me, you have plenty of oxygen. That's just the change in carbon dioxide in your body. You can override that. You can just stay with your body and you can override it. We can actually hold our breath for a very long time. When I say we, I mean other people.
Some people. How long can you go?
Well, now, after having done a freediving course,
yeah.
I got up to about 2 minutes and 10 seconds,
wow.
which doubled what I'd done before. But the guy that I learned with went over 4 minutes with no problems. So I felt a bit deflated.
I reckon that's pretty good. Yeah, boom, boom. We're talking to Catherine Hayman, writer of the book Storm and Grace, which has just hit the stands. And a lot of it is set beneath the water, on the surface of the water. What are the similarities, Catherine, between writing and freediving without oxygen?
Oh, the similar, I have to say, as I was sort of exploring this world, I kept thinking, this feels so familiar to me. The desire to go deep, the desire to be in a world that seems terribly important to your tribe, but is not necessarily important to the rest of the world. The desire to find something true and beautiful, that all of those things are ideas that freedivers seek out. And of course, they're ideas that writers seek out and often readers too. When I spoke to freedivers, they felt familiar to me. They felt often like my tribe, not because I'm a brilliant freediver, except in my own head, but because they felt like writers. They felt like artists. They're people who are pursuing something
yeah.
that is pure.
It's more than a sport.
I'm
it's
not
an
suggesting
artful.
It's not, you know, insane.
so is writing in this day and age,
well,
perhaps,
yes,
as
quite,
well.
Quite. I mean, I guess
and
the
they
thing
test
is,
boundaries. They're constantly boundaries. Pushing themselves and they're trying to listen to their instincts and to be at one with
absolutely
a greater force perhaps outside.
And
I
one
don't
of
know.
The one of the fantastic lessons from freediving actually for me has been about this state. I guess it's what Buddhists refer to as a kind of mindful detachment, which I've never been very good at. It's always mystified me as an idea. I'm kind of a bit racy in my head. To freedive, you sort of need to be attentive, to plan, to prepare, to train, and then let go. You have to be sort of not invested in the outcome. You're listening to yourself. You have a plan. and then you let the circumstances unfold. Each dive will be different. And again, it feels so familiar to me.
And that's where the magic happens.
That's where the magic happens, yeah.
So the other thing, though, is danger. And what this book, I think, looks at is the passion and danger in sexual attraction. And it asks some questions, or it made me think about why women sometimes and often are drawn to kind of dangerous guys.
Yeah.
Not the sweet, lovely guys.
I think that was really one of the things that I wanted to explore, and it's one of the things that I have been thinking about for a long time. As a young woman, I, like many of my peers, had to almost retrain my palate. You know, I remember having those conversations in my 20s with female friends, and we'd all be going, he's so sexy, but he's dangerous, but he's... And the moment of, maybe around mid-20s, going, you know, what would it be like if this person who's my best friend, who's really solid and fabulous, what would it be like to find him desirable? Almost having to retrain. And I think that we are trained as young women to desire men who take control.
So it's not a dangerous instinct. We're trained for it.
I think we are trained by story. We're trained by popular culture. And we are told the wrong stories. And I see it happening from a very young age.
In fairy tales?
Fairy tales are interesting. A lot of old fairy tales and old myths, I use one of them in this book very deliberately, because actually I've started to think that some of those older stories were sort of coded warnings almost. I have this sense that there were older women. You know, there's a story called The Handless Maiden, for instance, which is is one of those stories where the man is violent and, like, I guess Rumpelstiltskin, or, you know, there's many of them where the man is violent, there are recognizable signs, and the girl or the woman has to figure out how to survive it and how to get away, how to outwit him. She doesn't have physical strength, so she has to figure out some other way. Often it's about collaboration with other women, with community. Not always, but often those threads come out. So my sense is, and I'd need to do a PhD on this, but my sense from looking at quite a lot of those stories is that in the same way that some of the gospel songs that we hear that were coded warnings for the escape movement for slaves, go down to the river, this is the way you go.
Yes.
I kind of have a sense that some of those stories were coded warnings to young girls. This is what may happen to you. This is what you need to look out for. This is what the sign will be.
Mm. Interesting. You could do a whole PhD on fairy tales, but other writers have done that and work with that a lot. She's been... we'll have to get her on the show. I'm having a blank about her name, but her last novel was...
Kate Forsyth.
Kate Forsyth. Her last novel, yes, was based on the fairy tale of Sleeping Beauty, was it? And then set in Germany. The Beauty
Rapunzel.
And the Beast. That was Beauty and the Beast, the one set in Germany, and about a woman who was a Nazi spy. So in terms of this, you wanted to do a psychological thriller. How do different people read this, as you've found so far? Don't you think every woman and bloke will read this novel differently according to their own life and what they've been through and how they see love and danger?
Well, I mean, that's true of every book, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, readers bring their own story. And that's one of the lovely things about novels, I think, about fiction, that there's a kind of engagement between the book and the reader. So that's always true. I guess... I do know that I've seen a couple of sort of Goodreads type reviews of someone who did say that, you know, that there was a triggering thing for her. So I think that, you know, there will be people who will recognize certain signs, that there will be people who will recognize that rush of desire, which I very much wanted to get. The sort of the sexiness in that was really important to me, that feeling of being desired. I think there will be people who will be really swept into that. And there will be some people inevitably who earlier than others will go, I can see what's happening here. I can see what the undercurrent
is. We shouldn't give away too much there, though, because then they won't. But in terms of that, yes, you do recognise relationships and they're familiar to you in this. And In terms about that, how did you build the characters in this? Where did they? How did they come to you? Storm and Grace, who are the main characters in this, who fall in love passionately, wildly, crazily in love.
Yeah, they do. Well, she does, certainly. They actually, in some ways, arrived, I won't say fully formed. I mean, that never really quite happens. But I had a very, very strong sense of who they were. Grace is a young woman who's a scuba diver, a marine biology student, and she's, although incredibly capable, naive. So those things I kind of knew about her. I had a sense of her as being someone who was a little bit dislocated. And again, that came fairly early on, someone who's lived in lots of different places because of her family history. And that means that she lacks a sort of community of support. So I knew those things about her. What I didn't know about her early on was her voice or, you know, how it was that she was going to tell her story, or if she was going, who was going to tell her story. That was never clear to me. Storm, the thing that I had to be careful of with Storm, again, I had a very strong external sense of him. I sort of knew what he looked like. I knew that he was, you know, as he says, the deepest man in the world. I knew that he was a world champion freediver and that he was, you know, a powerful and charismatic figure. So those things meant that he was quite strong on the page early on. But again, what I had to work at was finding his sort of underbelly, finding some of the shades for him. And that came, as it always does, through the writing.
Mm. Yeah. And so have you written, in terms of writing a psychological thriller, how do you map that? Because you want to build tension and you want to build mystery and you want to pull people down into the depths, you know, like you do in this book, literally. So how do you map that out as a writer to pull people in, to keep that pace going and to make them slowly build up a sensation? How tricky is that?
Well, I mean, all writing is tricky. You know that. You're a writer.
No, I'm not a writer. But, you know, I wouldn't know how to write a novel if it fell over me. But, well, you know, how much of it is in pre-planning and in the writing, and how do you map that and know it's working?
Yeah. I should say first, I did not set out to write a thriller.
Okay.
And I, you know, it isn't in genre terms a thriller.
It's not a classical
thriller. No, it's what I wanted was a book that was thrilling. And that was necessary because I wanted it to be like diving and like falling into sudden obsessive love. And those two things are the same. I know that sounds like a, you know, newly converted freediving obsessive, but they feel so similar.
Yeah.
So in a sense, the freediving became the structure for me. I used the depth and what happens at depth.
And the story
goes
deeper.
So that became, so rather than plotting what, I guess in a, if you're writing a thriller or, you know, a conventional thriller or any, or a crime novel generally, you're going to sort of be plotting out something which is going to escalate upwards in tension. And although I wanted this tension, the idea I had in my mind was deepening tension. So that kind of drove it, actually. So I did, I knew certain story points. I knew I had a very particular ending in mind. I knew what that was. There is a sort of frame for the story. I knew what that was. So there were points that were almost like little clothes pegs. I knew what they were. And then I marked it out according to doing a dive, actually. Yeah. That was the
Which
gift.
Gave you a great structure. So, Catherine, you teach writing now, and it's sort of the new rock and roll. Everyone wants to write a novel. You know, so many people. Does everyone have a novel in them waiting to get out?
Well, there are so many answers, facetious and otherwise, to that question. There was a survey done a while ago in The Guardian in the UK, that asked people what their most desired dream job was. And being a writer was the most desired
Huge.
Dream job.
Yeah.
And, of course, most writers I know who were sort of weeping over a keyboard in their pyjamas with food stains on them, you know, we're all sort of phoning each other and going, who are these people? They've clearly never seen us. So I think there is a sort of an idea of you know, freedom that goes with the idea of being a writer, which is partly true and partly really not true. I think that what I've learned, I've taught and mentored many writers over many years, and I will say that I don't believe everyone has talent. I actually don't, and I think that's a no-brainer. But I think that hard work and discipline can, and the application of craft skills, I think people can learn to do a lot and be, I've seen people work really hard and become published writers, you know, and I've seen people who are immensely talented.
Yeah. And you're a midwife for many a book, aren't you?
I have been a midwife for many a book, and I have come to really believe that hard work with no talent loses out to limited talent and hard work. The best is both things.
Of course, yeah. What do you think is the most common mistake that people make when they set out to write their first novel because they feel they have this story that they want to tell? What's the most common mistake or brick wall they hit in telling that story? Oh, or is it just too hard to tell because everybody's so different?
I think people have different blocks, but I think the thing I would usually say or I observe from when I'm mentoring people is that the block that's in the writing is likely to be the same block that you have in your life, you know, without getting too sort of Oprah.
Go Oprah. You can't do that on a Friday night late on the radio.
Right.
When can you?
I think
I'm not giving you a free car,
you know,
though, okay?
Oh, right, I'm off. I think if you're struggling to find the centre of the story, that's likely to be something that's kind of, you know, you're maybe a bit wafty at that moment in your life. I would say that. But more straightforwardly, I think a very common thing is thinking that it won't be hard.
It's hard.
It won't take several goes.
It's hard. It's like diving without a tank,
yep.
without oxygen.
Yep.
Well, if people have heard this and it has brought up some issues for them, or you know someone who's in a situation that you don't think they're safe, the best number to call is 1800-RESPECT, 1800-RESPECT. But otherwise, of course, if it's an emergency, it's 000. But if you want more information and you want to dive deep into this story, it's called Storm and Grace. It's by Catherine Hayman and it's out now. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you.
Best of luck with the book.
This is Nightlife with Sarah McDonald on ABC Radio.